Hello, welcome to the Gadget Show podcast, the Inbox Edition. This is the episode where your questions take control.
That's right. And before we crack on with your questions, a big thanks to CEX for sponsoring this week's episode.
If you're thinking about upgrading your tech, but you don't want to pay full price, CEX is well worth a look.
Yeah, you can trade in your old phones, your tablets, games, cameras, whatever.
Yep, and then you can turn them into cash or credit towards something refurbished.
And we're talking recent phones, consoles, games and cameras, not just old kit. Not that there's anything wrong with old kit.
There's nothing wrong with old kit. Everything is tested and covered with a 5-year warranty as well.
So head to webuy.com or your local CEX and see what your old tech could get you. Right then, let's jump in with our first question for this week's Inbox Edition. This is asked by Daniel Harper, Susie. Mm-hmm. Do we actually need to upgrade our phones every 2 years?
Honestly, for most people, no, you really don't. I don't. A few years ago, upgrades made a massive difference. You know, going back in time, there were better cameras, faster processors, better screens. But now they've kind of sort of reached a saturation point where improvements are much more gradual. So if your phone still runs smoothly, it holds decent charge and it gets software updates, I don't think there's a real need to replace it every 2 years at all. I think we're seeing people hold on to their devices for longer now, which is better financially, also better for the environment as well. And unless you're a real tech enthusiast or your battery's on its last legs, you can comfortably stretch that upgrade cycle out to whatever you want, really.
And you've had a battery upgrade on your iPhone recently.
I did, yeah. I changed the battery. Just cost me, I think, about 100 quid. But it gives you another couple of years' life of it, really.
I mean, I think as well, phones initially had something of an AI moment, didn't they? Do you remember? Mm. Like, you know how AI is changing almost every day at the moment because it's in that kind of rocket booster launch phase, right? Which happens to a new sector that is massively well-resourced financially and with hardware and software. And so you're seeing huge changes. We've been through that. We've had our iPhone moment with smartphones, haven't we?
Yeah.
Now, as we're our previous episode, actually, we were talking about the iterative nature of phone launches now. So, okay, what I remember from the recent launch of the most premium iPhone, the 17 Pro, really, I guess, was the fact that it can do Apple ProRes 4K footage because I'm making a film and that would be interesting to me. I can't remember much more about it. I was certainly underwhelmed by the AI, the lack of movement in AI features. I think that could be a reason to upgrade when eventually they catch up. When Apple step into the AI arena and Siri becomes a really useful agentic AI, so an AI that can do things like book flights for you and you know, useful stuff where it has a bit of agency. That could be a reason to upgrade. But I back you on that, Susie. I think you're absolutely right. I think we've reached a kind of market saturation point where maybe 3 years is about right if you want to, you know, keep up, especially with AI, but some of the even the hardware iterations now. Again, we've talked about how a lot of hardware, RAM and graphics hardware, is going to the AI sector. That will also slow down the innovation cycle in the production of phones. So, yeah, not necessary.
No,
not necessary every 2 years.
Probably,
not anymore.
You know, it might depend what you use your phone for, but generally for most people, then no, you definitely don't need to upgrade every couple of years. Here's a question from Mark Hughes. Do you think that AI will take your jobs, Susie and Jason? I do hope so.
As long as I can still get paid, that'd be ace.
I'm just kidding.
We've tried it, Suze.
I know, yeah, we have. I think that AI, because I was talking about the Kabi Lame thing, wasn't I, a few weeks ago, that he'd sold his image and his company basically for $1 billion so that they could use an AI version of him to sell their products. So obviously, technically, yes, of course, it can be done. I think AI is going to...
They contacted me, you know.
Oh, did they offer you $1 billion?
£3.50.
Okay. Well, you know, something, isn't
it? I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah. You could negotiate up maybe a little bit to a fiver.
Thank you so much for
that. That's okay. I think that AI is going to change jobs. There's obviously no getting away from that. But presenting and storytelling does rely quite a lot on personality chemistry and real human reactions. People listen because they're hearing real conversations. They're not perfectly generated ones. So I can see AI helping behind the scenes with research summaries, production support. I don't think it replaces human presenters. Let me rephrase this. I don't think it replaces good human presenters anytime soon. But I think broadcasters from the heart, it's more difficult to replace them. What do you think about that?
I think all of this, it's a kind of unnecessarily binary conversation. It's simple that things that are quintessentially human, like someone that makes belts, right, leather belts, or someone that can, that can make pottery, or vinyl, or making a good cup of coffee. These human things, right? Or therapy, really good therapy. Don't get me wrong, I think that AI could help in the NHS and the health sector, including therapy, and alleviate pressure in those sectors. But I mean the gold standard, the thing that you pay for, it only enhances the value of the human in the chain, right? Mm. The problem we've got is that we think it's normal since the 1950s, and 60s and particularly the 70s, for people to sit in cubicles in offices and effectively act like peripherals for computers. That's not a good use of a human, entering data, looking at data, passing large amounts of information. AI is so good at all that pattern recognition stuff. All those jobs are gone. Legal secretary, gone.
Yeah. But I think the question, just to come back to the actual question, was about can we be replaced? I think you're specifically saying, do you think that you and I could be replaced by AI?
So 100% we could be replaced, and we will, and there will be really famous AI hosts that are, you know, unashamedly AI. But there will also always be a place for the fuzzy logic of conversations like this. The fact that I'm actually thinking this and I could say something dumb and then I'm accountable for it. You could walk up to me in the street, as people do, and agree or disagree. And that's irreplaceable.
I don't think your AI is going to be able to do the Wolverhampton accent like you do it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Ta very much.
Ta very much.
We hope that's answered your question.
Right. If you haven't heard yet, where have you been? The Gadget Show competition is back. And this one is big.
Very big. We're talking a whopping £5,000 to spend at CEX, all on whatever tech you want.
That's £5,000 to blow on gadgets, old or new.
Basically, whatever tech you've been dreaming about, you could buy it.
All you've got to do is head over to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and join one of our paid tiers, which start from as little as the price of a cup of coffee. We've got three tiers, light, mid and max. And depending on which tier you're on, you'll get more entries into the competition. Once you've chosen your tier, you'll need to direct message the answer to this multiple choice question. In what year did The Gadget Show first air on TV? Was it A, 2002, B, 2004, C, 2006, or D, 2007? And remember, being a paid member doesn't just get you into the competition.
Yeah, you'll also unlock ad-free listening, early access to episodes, and exclusive bonus episodes. And for the first time, we're offering the complete archive of Gadget Show episodes. Yes, that's over 20 years and nearly 500 episodes of gadgety goodness just for our max subscribers.
Epic. So if you fancy supporting the podcast, getting loads of extra content and having a chance to win £5,000 to spend at CEX, head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and get subscribed.
For full terms and conditions, please visit the link via this episode. Oliver Bennett says, is physical media actually safer than digital downloads long term? In some ways, yes. When you buy physical media, a disc, a cartridge, a tape, you physically own that thing. And as long as you look after it, you can usually use it indefinitely. With digital downloads, you're often buying a license rather than full ownership. And occasionally those licenses change or they disappear. We've already seen examples where films or games have been removed from online stores, which can be very frustrating. So there's definitely an argument for physical media for a long-term ownership perspective. What do you think?
I think if things are critically important, we need to have legacy storage of them physically, magnetically, or on an SD card or on tape or whatever it be, if it's really important. So there's a practical answer, but there's also the kind of philosophical answer, which is that they have more value when they're physical. So putting in a cartridge and clipping it into a console has an incredibly romantic, well, is a romantic experience and which adds to the enjoyment.
Which I'm just going to say, we need them. We need that right now.
Vinyl, like I think you made about, it.
Exactly. You didn't say
I had the best I had the best audible experience. Yeah. No, you didn't say that. No. You said I
was filled with joy.
Yeah.
But listen, there's something else that when you were talking then, you're so right. You made such a brilliant point there. When you physically own something, you don't just own it. There's a story behind it. So maybe, you had to earn money in a certain way too, and you remember saving up to buy that thing. I had it because I was playing Level 42 as well, actually, on my record player. And this is the lovely, lovely story. And I recognise that it's not a normal story, but I mentioned somewhere that I was, buying a record player and vinyl. This was a few years ago when I got back into vinyl. And Mark King from Level 42 sent me a message. He went, "What's your address? I'm going to send you some records." And he sent me some vinyl, and I was playing it yesterday, and I got a tear in my eye just because I thought, what? This is human interaction, the loveliness of somebody like Mark King went out of his way to say to his record company, "Can you send some records to this address?" Went out of his way to do it. I received them, and yesterday I was playing them on my record player. I thought, that is, in this world of shitness at the moment, that just gave me that lovely, warm, fuzzy, human interaction feeling.
The smell of your Netflix download. Oh, the smell of Prime.
Nothing.
It's the smell of...
soulless.
Here's a sentence that no one's ever said. The smell of... downloading something from Apple.
Oh, it's just a different story completely, isn't it? I never thought about this before. Thank you for asking this question, because look at us, you've both stirred up some passion in the pair of us. But to have the physicality of it, it takes up space, but the memories, the senses that it kind of
relights. Well, so they can charge what they want. They can charge what they want for, reissuing a game from the 80s. They can charge obscene amounts of money. I've got my Game Boy cartridges, and they cost me pounds, like nothing. And that will never change. And I can clip them into this device. Anyway, we could go on and on about this and be really boring. Question, Oliver.
Thank you ever so much for that. Really enjoyed answering that. I can't wait to go and put my records on. Emily Walsh asks a question. She says, Does deleting cookies and cash make your phone faster? In a nutshell, sometimes, but it's not a miracle fix, Emily. So clearing a cache basically removes temporary files that apps and websites have stored. If something's gone wrong or an app feels a bit buggy, doing a clear out, can help it run properly again, can't it? But it doesn't magically upgrade your phone's performance. That's what I'm trying to say.
But it's a bit like sort of tidying your desk, isn't it? But it doesn't necessarily... increase the performance verbatim. Tommy Wilson has got a question. Does putting your phone in airplane mode make it charge faster? What a great question.
It does that actually tiny bit. Little bit.
Does it?
Yeah, because when it's in airplane mode, your phone obviously isn't searching for signal and downloading data and constantly checking for updates in the background. So that means that the energy, more of the energy coming in goes directly towards the charging rather than running the phone. It's not dramatic, but if you're very low on battery or if you're, in a rush, it can help.
So I've got a tech confession up next. This one's from Dan Mitchell. Yeah. And Dan says, I was walking into the office listening to a comedy podcast on my phone. Okay. I had my headphones in, laughing away to myself. And as I walked through the door, I took them out and started chatting to everyone like normal, only the audio didn't stop. Instead of disconnecting, my phone had automatically connected to the big Bluetooth speaker in the meeting room. So suddenly the entire office got blasted with these very loud, very inappropriate jokes from the podcast. And there I am, trying to look casual, pretending nothing happened. The worst part, everyone just slowly turned to look at me, smiling. Safe to say, I would double check my Bluetooth connections in future before entering any professional environment. That is really interesting.
Yeah.
That's really funny. That's a good thing. Can really catch you out, that.
It can. It's, you know, like if you're listening to something and your AirPods or whatever haven't connected and it's playing out on your phone. On a plane, I get this sometimes.
Yeah, you don't know.
A lot going on.
You can hear it. You think it's...
Like, oh,
but do you ever
God,
think
God.
It's in your AirPods? But it's not. It's
yeah,
on the phone.
Yeah, it's yeah. on. And then the person next to you looks at you a bit strange because of what you're listening to or whatever. Yeah, good point. Thanks for sending that in. That's great. It must have been so embarrassing. Right, it's tech quiz time, Jace.
Cool.
And it's a gaming one, so it's on you. Okay.
All right.
I want you to name the top 10 best-selling handheld consoles of all time, ranked from the biggest seller at number one down to the smaller seller at number 10. Okay. How confident are you feeling?
Very.
Okay, I'll give you some names.
I've got my Game Gear, which has got the Back to the Future graphics on it. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Well, I tell you what, you've lifted up a Game Gear. That's in the Go top on, 10. Where does it sit?
Oh, 7.
Close, 9.
Ah. Oh.
With 10 million sales, Sega's Game Gear tried to beat Nintendo with a full-colour backlit screen years ahead of its time, and it looked fantastic compared with the rivals. But heavy battery usage made players swapping batteries all the time, so something that ultimately limited its success. Okay, so that's number 9, Game Gear. What about the Nintendo 3DS?
I'm going to go 7.
Oh, I thought you were going to go 6. You would have got it bang on. It's 6. It's number 6. 75.9 million. It launched with the headline feature of glasses-free 3D, but its real strength came later with a steady stream of classic Nintendo franchises. That's in at number 6, Nintendo 3DS. How about Game Boy Advance?
5.
It's number 4. Game Boy Advance, 81.5 million. The Game Boy Advance, essentially a more powerful, modernised Game Boy, giving players better graphics while keeping the portability that fans loved. So that's number 4.
I loved my Advance. I used to play nothing but Advance Wars. It was like a kind of sort of, I don't know, manga, anime style tank game. It was absolutely brilliant. I loved it. Shooter thing. It's more like an RTS. Anyway,
okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
What about your PSP, PlayStation Portable?
3rd.
Oh, you should have just gone the other way. 5th.
Ah!
Only by, like, Game Boy Advance was 81.5 million sales. PlayStation Portable, 80 million. So, obviously, quite close there. PSP.
I'm getting
not like
so
a,
close, but I just...
I know, you're just one away, aren't you? A mini console, home console in your hands, really.
Yeah, and as people probably know, because I'm sure we've talked about it before, I was sent by the Gadget Show to Japan, to Sony's headquarters in Tokyo, to see the first ever version. And a truly beautiful thing. Beautiful.
Let's go PlayStation Vita.
I'm going to go number 7.
Oh, number 8.
Oh, come on.
You always won away. 10 to 15 million. PlayStation Vita was packed with advanced features, a beautiful display, dual analog sticks and powerful hardware. Struggled to find a mainstream moment, though, and that's number 8.
God, I'm getting so close, but I'm not there yet. Come on.
Let's lock in.
Because people listening, watching and thinking, Jace, come on, man.
Let's go Game Boy Color.
It's not number 1, it's 2.
It's 3.
Oh, come on!
318 million sales. Game Boy was the device that made handheld gaming mainstream. And it's number 3.
Can I just say something so that I can redeem myself in the eyes and ears of the listeners? That number 1 is the DS. Am I right? What?
Right, where are you going to put the Nintendo DS? Are you crying?
I'm crying because of the waste that is my life.
Come on, Nintendo DS.
I'm putting it in 1. That's what I think it is. I know it's not, but that's what I would say.
It's number two. This, just because you want it to be, it's 100. It's close, right? It's only a million difference, really. The Nintendo DS took portable gaming beyond hardcore players by adding a touchscreen and stylus controls. You know the rest of it. Number two, 154 million sales. Let's go. Steam Deck.
10.
Yes.
Yay!
Woo! 3.5 million. It's a bit of an estimation. 3.5 million sales. Obviously brought PC gaming into handheld form, letting players run full desktop style games on the move. Game and Watch.
Number 7.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. 43 million sales. Before the Game Boy, Nintendo's Game & Watch series brought simple LCD games into people's pockets for the very first time. Each unit played just one game, but their portability and clever design helped lay the groundwork for the entire handheld gaming industry. And I thought that was worth saying. Right. Yeah. Now we just have number one. What do you think it is?
Switch.
Yes!
Yay! Thank God. I just got three right in a row. That has redeemed me, certainly in my own eyes, probably not in the eyes and ears of the viewers, but there we go.
155 million sales.
Wow.
Plus, top of the tree. Changed the idea of what handheld could be, a console you can play with on the TV and then instantly pick it up and carry it around with you. As we know, we've talked about it endlessly on this.
It does actually sort of straddle the portable and home console definition, doesn't it?
Yeah, one of the biggest gaming success stories ever, the Nintendo Switch at number one of best-selling handheld consoles. Well done. You did really well.
Thank you.
I thought it was really hard, that.
It was, but it was loads of fun. Love it.
Yeah, really good. How did you do at home? We hope that you enjoyed that one. And that's a wrap for this Inbox Edition. Huge thank you for all your messages. Please keep them coming in.
Yeah, seriously, we love hearing from you. Tech disasters, accidental purchases, gadget fails, big wins. And that's just me and Susie. Whatever it is, send it our way on socials or email us at contact@northone.tv.
And a huge thank you to CEX for supporting the podcast. If you're thinking about upgrading, hunting down something retro, or you just fancy turning old tech into cash or credit, head to webuy.com or pop in to your local store. And don't forget, everything comes with a 5-year warranty.
Yeah, and if you haven't already, please make sure to follow and subscribe. We really need you to do that simple act of clicking the thumb or whatever it is, or a favourite, and subscribing. The main Gadget Show podcast drops every week with new gadgets, big tech stories, and, well, the usual chaos. We really need your support.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
See ya.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.